How do we cope when our world is unexpectedly turned upside down?
Welcome to Coping Mechanisms. We're artists and filmmakers Ian Forsyth and Jane Pollard, and this is the first episode of our Somerset House podcast.
When lockdown was imposed on the UK, almost all our projects came to a grinding halt. With unexpected time on our hands, we talked about maybe starting a project online. The idea was that we'd talk to people about the music they'd been listening to whilst isolated. And seeing photographs of empty streets, we even came up with a name for it, Deserted Island Discs. But then we literally did nothing else about it.
But fortunately, some people did bother. These online lockdown projects have helped many of us feel a little less isolated. Over the next four episodes, we'll be speaking to some of the people behind them. We're keen to find out what we can learn from these people, what drives them to take that extra step from having an idea to acting on it.
For some, especially performers, it's about finding ways to carry on regardless. Jarvis Cocker had a new album and tour lined up, both postponed because of the pandemic. So he's been hosting a domestic disco on Instagram. Spinning records from his living room, he invites us to join him for a socially distanced dance.
First question, so simple, how are you coping?
Well, I think people who make things have got, you know, a better chance of coping from the off. I'm lucky enough to be in that position, you know. If you lose yourself in trying to write a song or just write some prose or something, once you kind of get into that, you forget about what's going on around you. You know, there's been a bit of a resurgence in people making stuff. You know, a lot of our modern society has been about consuming for a long time, turning a screen on and looking at something and the world coming to you. So you don't really have to create your own distractions. As my grandmother would have said, make your own entertainment. Well, people have had to make their own entertainment over this period. You know, I was talking to some people who were saying something about this experience has reminded them of being like when they were a teenager, when you would kind of go up to your bedroom and listen to your favourite record or something like that, and it would mean a real lot to you because it represented something that you were aspiring to, that kind of was telling you about a world that you wanted to inhabit when you were set free from the confinement of being in the family home. You know, so there's been a bit of a flavour of that, you know, that we're cut off from the outside world. Culture becomes more important, becomes more fundamental. It's not just like an amuse-bouche, it's the main meal now, you know.
I guess the thing we've really lost, though, is the ability to do that with other people. I mean, our work has always involved collaboration of some sort, and I'm sure being in a band, you're used to being around other people. So how's suddenly being on your own?
I used to be terrible with being in my own company. With the band, you know, it's disrupted everybody's life, but we were supposed to be going on a tour at the beginning of May, and so we would have been, you know, rehearsing and then doing that. And it had taken us quite a long time to get that record together, so we were kind of champing at the bit. And so we kind of had a Zoom call when the lockdown first happened, and we thought, oh, maybe we can just make music over the computer. So we all started kind of trying to play together. It was so terrible, you know, because of all the latency and time lag issue. It's something that you take for granted, just the thing of being in a room with other people and doing your thing suddenly wasn't possible. And we did have a more serious look into ways of maybe being able to play together online, which would have involved everyone playing to a clip track and then something like MIDI would scrunch it all back into sync before it was broadcast. But we had like maybe two sessions where we tried to teach ourselves that, and everybody's computers were different ages, and it was awful. You know, it was like it made you feel like you'd gone back to the very, very first days of being in a band where you're just desperately trying to play in time with each other. You know, it was like the last 40 years never happened. It was awful.
What are you doing personally to help you stay positive or to escape?
You know, at the beginning of the lockdown, like a lot of people, I think one thing I noticed was that my mind was really jumping from one subject to another. And I think part of that obviously was being in a strange new situation and the fact that you knew that this kind of global thing was happening. So you're in an uncharted territory. But also I think part of it was not having access to those distractions. Normally in a day you would kind of like look at your computer for 5 minutes and then go off and eat something and then look at your phone for another 5 minutes and then go off somewhere and talk to somebody, maybe have a meeting with someone. So you never have to stick in one location, either physically or mentally, for that long. But suddenly you were, you know, and but your brain wasn't used to it. You know, your body was static, but your brain took a bit of time to sync up with that. I think Stephen Fry was on the radio not long after lockdown first started, and he said, you know, it's a good idea to write a schedule out in the morning when you wake up. He said it sounds really square to do that, but just it'll give you something to kind of hold on to. So I tried that, and I think that is good because you write it down, at least it's externalised then. And every time you start feeling your mind jumping around, you can just go and stare at this piece of paper and see what you said that you were going to be doing at 2 o'clock, you know. And even if you don't do that thing, at least there's some structure there. Like a lot of people, I suppose, then I just sat down and tried to think what I could do. Like I say, we should have been on tour, so I think I was in that zone where I wanted to, you know, I'd been geeing myself up to performing in some way. And obviously there was no chance to perform for an audience in the most normal sense of the word. The domestic disco idea came from my partner Kim. She was watching this guy called JLube64. And he's like a guy in America, and he's DJing from his garage, which is somewhere in New York State. And he kind of puts records on and seemed to facilitate this something unfolding in real time and people kind of forming an instant community in a way. And so that's, I just nicked his idea basically, and that's why we started the domestic disco. And I found like a slightly malfunctioning laser down in the shed, so I brought that up and just tried to set it up to make it like as disco-like as possible. I suppose because one of the songs on the record that was supposed to get released around now is called House Music All Night Long, and that kind of talks about feeling jealous of some people who were out dancing.
Lost in the land of the living room.
So he's kind of like he's dancing around his house. This thing of house music with having two meanings of, you know, acid house music or when you're stuck in the house on your own, it just is house music, you know, singing to the settee. So,
I was listening to house music all night long. And all day too, I was waiting for you.
Again, going back to when I used to do the radio show on Sunday afternoons, I used to do that show live, so I always used to stay in on a Saturday, which got on Kim's nerves quite a lot because, you know, she might want to go out and actually enjoy her life. So we used to have domestic discos a lot on a Saturday, just the two of us having a dance. So, and I always liked that. The reason why I thought it could be useful in this context is just that when you're dancing, you're not thinking too much. You know, once you've got over that initial awkwardness of dancing, you know, especially dancing in the house where you're like, something about dancing on carpet feels a bit weird, you know, not quite right. It should be a sticky floor. But once you get into that, once you get over that awkwardness and do it, it's a way of turning your mind off a bit. You concentrate on just dancing to the rhythm of the song. It's like your body takes over from your mind. And I think that's been important at this time because you're getting so much information about what's going on, a lot of it kind of scary information. You start trying to wonder about, you know, what's going to happen next, when's it going to finish? You know, all this kind of stuff, wondering whether people you know are okay. At some point, you just got to kind of wipe the slate clean at some point, just kind of stop. And so that was the idea there, that the disco would kind of help people to dance their mental health problems away.
What surprised you the most?
Yeah, it felt like you had hung out with some people for a while. And you had that feeling like when you're a bit exhausted after a party, you know. And I guess, you know, there was a slight catharsis or whatever. It felt like something had happened. And fundamentally, it was just two people jumping around in the living room. So that was, I was kind of inspired by that, you know, that I guess that's why we kept doing them. It's obviously been there from the beginning of so-called modern humans, this desire to somehow externalise what's going on in your mind in some way so that another person will look at it and kind of understand it or recognise it. And then that forms a bond between you. You realise that you're not alone in your head. We can look at stuff and it's recognisable to each other, and so it emphasises what we've got in common rather than the differences. And I think that's like kind of one of the important functions of culture, to make people realise that at the root of it we're all pretty similar. I do think it's a fundamental part of human nature, that, I guess, yeah.
Alain Fusion Clapham is the founder of Black Man's Time. At the start of lockdown, he was just about to launch a new live project, Black Love Stories, an immersive mix of spoken word, art, film and conversation. Determined to create something positive out of the moment, the event was swiftly reassembled online and now airs every Friday night on Instagram Live.
We, the poets, writers, visualizers, musicians and vocalists, we create visions of a better tomorrow. Together we make ourselves heard above the noise, and ignore the voices that question our cause. We stand in our power, ready to fight, knowing our life reflects art and our art.
So I want you to take us right back. Mid-March, you're preparing for a live event at Clapham Library, and then the country goes into lockdown. What happens?
The best laid plans. You know, I've been passionately developing a project called BMT, stands for Black Man Time, which has always been about telling the awesome everyday stories of black men. And we were making great inroads. We had support from the Arts Council and they'd seen the vision. And by our second year, they had put through the funding for a year's worth of live events across the capital. And we had great partners like the Wellcome Collection. So I was locked and loaded. My year planner was all booked in for the first time in my life, doing stuff I wanted to do, and then a bloody pandemic gets in the way. So rather than be perturbed by the whole thing, it was just like, what are we here for? We're here for community. We're here to tell stories. Let's just switch platforms. So it would have been about a week or two before full on lockdown, and we just said, listen, the show goes on. So we switched to digital, ran it through the Instagram. And it was amazing. It was amazing just to connect the same poets, but with a global audience, and doing it into the screen for the first time. I love live hosting. You know, it's one of the things I'm passionate about. Like my thing is, I say I inhale the moment and exhale meaning. Like I try and understand what's happening in a room and facilitate that. So I just learned how to do that digitally. You know, everyone's sitting in their house, office, bedroom, and they're all nervously waiting for their chance to speak, you know, to the community. We have people sitting at home having dinner, hanging out, and they're trying to justify why they're staring at their phone for 2 hours. And my job is to pick out the best moments of excitement, of meaning, and facilitate that. And it's a privilege. So I just come into it with as much preparation as possible. You know, we myself and Miss Yankee, who's my partner on the project, we give a tremendous amount of thought to the theme. We try and find poets and musicians who reflect the theme. If it's about love revolution, you know, when we got Solomon OB, who was in Bristol when the Edward Colston statue came down, he was standing on the plinth reciting words of empowered poetry to these people in their emotions, and he's our special guest explaining what it is to have a love revolution.
This is just a moment. Let's go home now.
So it's my privilege to give them platforms and to amplify their voices globally. When we have people from Virginia talking about the struggle in America, and then in a moment of solidarity, when they're like, we didn't know about Windrush. We didn't know about the scandal in the UK. We didn't understand what was going on. This is connecting us. And you have that moment as a host where you're like, I am a beneficiary of this moment. I'm not, you know, the ringmaster as much as I'm being entertained and fraud and engaged. So I just keep on my toes and I'm bloody exhausted. By the end of it, I am smashed. But it's a really satisfying feeling of a marathon of edutainment and coming out the end of it feeling like, wow, that was real engagement.
And I think what was just so joyous listening to the show was it didn't feel like a product of adversity.
Yeah, let's make the most of it. It was really, really uplifting, which is hard to achieve.
The new Friday night has been new ways of connecting. And it's been, there's a kind of a levelling of the playing field for me, because when we have somebody like Bai Kemi, who's been like a foundation member of the Black Love Stories family, you know, I watched her go from in the gallery, watching the show, to writing poetry, to appearing on the show, reciting poems she's just written as part of our free write section, where for 6 minutes, everyone writes an inspired poem. And she's there, and she just finished baking a cake, and she's got a child with her, and she's performing. I'm thinking, you wouldn't do that pre-quarantine. You know, you'd be in your house with your child, and now all of a sudden she's front and centre and as valid as any, you know, stage performer. So there's something beautiful about these levelling moments. Afia Nakesh, who's a young political thinker, he's only about 17 years old, and he's spoken at the House of Commons and challenged, you know, ideas of knife crime and authority. You know, he reminded me that these moments, pandemics, wars, outbreaks, they break down the structure of society and force people to reimagine things. And he's 17, he's telling me about how the NHS comes out of crisis and all these things come out of crisis. So beautiful things come out of these challenging moments. And I'm proud to say that some of the best moments of our show are beautiful understandings that we have to carry on post-quarantine. We have to continue giving platforms to people who are in their houses, are in obscure parts of the world that aren't in the Hollywood or London or this kind of metropolis spotlight. There's wonderful things that we can continue to champion. I mean, I've been really reflecting on the nature of change. And one of the things I was saying to my friend was, we live in a world with extroverts and we love them, and their voices are front and centre of most of our entertainment experiences, and in, they're front and centre in politics and in lots of different fields. But we have fundamental ongoing problems that plague society, and this has been a moment where those less heard voices, those quieter voices, the more introvert voices have been amplified, you know. And I think that's where change happens, when the people you don't hear from speak. Because surely that's the missing part of the equation. It's like, we've heard from you, not you, but like that person has spoken 10 times, that person's been streamed, that person's had a million views, and it hasn't shifted the narrative. But then these characters who are less heard, less celebrated, get heard more. You're thinking, ah, that's what was missing. A new perspective, a new voice. So that's exciting. For the first time, some people went and planted stuff and they discovered the joys of that discipline of gardening. Some people decorated their houses. Some people became teachers for their children and realised they have a gift for communicating in a different way. Some people sat down with their mum and just talked with them. Some people painted, some people drew. We made a show about spoken word and the importance of love. And when we come out of quarantine, I think we're going to have to accept that we figured something out on our own. In our little silos, we figured out a way of feeling alive, and we don't need that qualified by a third party. You know, some people I know want to continue working from home. They were super productive. They have a new relationship with their children, a new relationship with their partner. And we're gonna have to go back to the system and say, what is it you want from us? Do you want us to follow the letter of your rulings, or do you want outcomes? And if you want outcomes, let me live a fuller life. I'm gonna carry on gardening. I'm going to carry on painting, I'm going to carry on doing poetry, and I'll hit my deadline. You'll get your outputs. And we're moving away from this kind of, you know, industrial revolution idea of us all marching into a building and bang, the alarm goes off and then we go to our desk and we punch buttons. It's a load of nonsense. You know, we need to have a lot more of a human approach if we expect people to have a human approach to what's going on in the world, which is a need for, you know, more gender equality. The rights of black people in the wake of George Floyd has caused an outpouring and a global outcry. And we're asking people to have more empathy, and that translates to allowing people to enjoy themselves and have a living and not live to work. Nobody wanted a pandemic. Nobody wanted, you know, these atrocities as a catalyst for change, but they've come.
It's an interesting shift in the series. If you look at the kind of the way you've themed each episode, that you've gone from kind of health is wealth and self-love and these very kind of almost introverted, the need in at the first stages of quarantine to really kind of hang on in there, you know, to look after yourself, to not put too much pressure on yourself, to cope.
You have to respond to the world. You don't live in your own little bubble. You have to respond. So we were like, yes, we'll deal with that at the appropriate time, but we really could use this platform to deal with pain, trauma, and the issues that are affecting our community. And we're going to keep doing that until it feels appropriate and right to shift the narrative across. With any challenge in life, the more you prepare for change, the more ready you are to create change.
You been kind of tuning into it, any particular things during lockdowns?
A lot of poetry shows. You can't come into a space and not learn and research and be part of that. I paid a lot more attention to a lot of our what we call our family. So if somebody's a viewer of the show, you know, I will follow them, seeing their posts, learning about what they're up to has been great. I remember when the whole lockdown thing kicked in and we all felt really isolated, and there was a guy called D Nice, who's a DJ, started off as a rapper, but I remember just coming back from, you know, collecting some stuff to take home, and I got a message on my Insta saying, tune in, click here. And I remember pressing okay, because I trusted that person, and this incredible stream of soul, funk, R&B. And I was like, this is all the music I love. And I remember driving home and just leaving it playing. And when I got into my house, kept carrying on playing it. And I was getting ready for bed, I was still playing it. And then you had like Michelle Obama, Erykah Badu, you had Lenny Kravitz. They were all tuning in. Quincy Jones is tuning in. And Quincy Jones's daughter was like, Dad, why are you here? And it was this real great moment when like, the numbers were going up, 100K, 200, like it was just going up and up and up. And I was like, I'm partying with Michelle Obama. I'm partying with Redman and my favorite rappers. And we all have this same thing. We're all looking at a device that looks a little like that. And we're all having a communal moment. And it was just such a, for me, just installed that belief that this could be a game changer. So when I saw that, I was just like, I think we're going to be okay.
I think everybody was thinking it in terms of like there would be one day and they'd just go lockdown over and then everybody would just explode out into the streets and like roll all over each other and lick each other or whatever, I don't know, and drink as much as they could or I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be like that. You know, human contact, either physical or mental, whatever, is really important in a way, is what makes life kind of bearable. I think that's maybe one of the things that could be positive coming out of this situation, that the pennies drop with that people kind of realise. I feel like I'm going to launch into some corny song. People who need people.
Coping Mechanisms is a Somerset House podcast. Created by Ian Forsyth and Jane Pollard. Produced by Eleanor Scott and Daniel Brewer. Music by Bernholtz. Thank you to all the artists who have contributed to the series. To listen to more and to subscribe to the Somerset House podcast, search Somerset House on your favourite podcast app. Over and out.